Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Zygentoff have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Hull, shoots good! Bobby Hull!
Juneau trying to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bourque and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men, cutting for the net. He's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal!
Brunet carries in, rolling in front of him, and in a shot! Desjardins following the play, and he misses the short cut. Here he is again. Scores!
All right, hockey fans, you're listening to the hard-checking, kick-saving, sudden-death scoring NHL breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kurtz of RotoExperts.com. We're bringing all the on- and off-ice action, as well as keeping you fans and you fantasy owners fully informed at the top of your respective leagues with our fantasy reports, including the IR, goalie report, line updates, and waiver wire recommendations. Today is, of course, Monday, November 11th, just a day before Election Day, which I think is pretty significant to most people, but it's also kind of the wrapping up of a full month of the season, getting things getting exciting, ratcheting up here in the NHL. Lots to talk about, fantasy reports, as always, but I want to talk about the coaching change. Well, I'm off to a flying start today already, aren't I, George? The coaching change in L.A., what precipitated it? Was he the issue? And what is it going to look like going forward there in L.A.? And George has sort of teased it a little bit, you know, a couple of different times already this season, talking or at least hinting, maybe even, you know, kind of trolling goalies a little bit about the complaints with the goalie equipment. So I want to ask him a little bit more about that, since we do have a little bit more information now that we're about a month into the season, because it's one thing to test out these equipments in practice, in a hard practice, in preseason, and training camp. It's a whole other thing that once you actually start playing NHL games and people are shooting pucks at you at 80, 90, and 100 miles an hour. See what George's thoughts are on that. But let's start with the bigger news. As I'd said, the LA Kings firing John Stevens, their coach, after just over a year. And he had a pretty, successful, for the most part, year last year. They played at least comparatively under Sutter a little bit more of an up-tempo game. They scored a little bit more under Sutter. That wasn't the case so far this year. So it is kind of interesting, even understanding they're off to a terrible start, 4-8-1, kind of early to make this kind of change, normally speaking. So, George, to those questions I just teased when it came to the LA Kings, is this the classic situation of you can't fire all the players, so you fire the coach? Or do you think he was the problem, he was the issue? I know there's sort of been some interesting quotes from a number of people, specifically Rob Blake, about it. I know one of the things that he said was that he felt the players weren't emotionally engaged, which is, in my opinion, a pretty damning statement to make. But again, even above and beyond that, you know, do you think this was a system thing? Do you think the coach is behind the lack of emotional involvement and therefore that alone justifies moving him? Or is this what everybody's been implying? And not just me and you have sort of talked about it and teased them a little bit over the summer, particularly when they signed Kovalchuk, you know, another older player to a team with a lot of older players on expensive long-term contracts. So is this sort of the beginning of what's going to be an ugly 3 or 4 years to sort of just ride out these contracts that they probably can't trade, and it's really just about an old, aging team? You know, so when you look at this whole situation, George, how do you break it down? What are you thinking, and will this coaching change, you think, make any substantial difference? George?
Well, you know, I can't say I'm surprised. Not because I think Stevens should have been fired or anything like that, but this is a team with, I guess, high expectations, right? I think they know they're a veteran team. It's not like they're oblivious to the fact that they're an older team. You know, so they know their window is sort of limited, where they're not going to be. It's not going to be 3 years from now, this won't be the same team. So they need to win now. So I think it's all played into it. I think they're disappointed, ticked off, annoyed, whatever you want, whatever word you want to use at the start. And they felt a change needed to be made. You know how I feel about this, Scott. If you're going to fire your coach a month into the season, then he should have been fired or not hired before the season started. You know, I think it's kind of silly. It's a small sample size, but you wonder what was going on there behind the scenes. Were the players complaining? It's just – I think there's a lot of going on there, but I do think most of it is the fact that they just felt it's not working. It's just not working, whether it's the system, it's the coach, the motivation, whatever it might be. I always find it hilarious that players need to be motivated. The fact that you're making millions of dollars doesn't do that enough for you. You actually need to be motivated to play. Maybe it was the injuries, Dustin Brown getting hurt early on, Jonathan Quick being hurt what seems like most of the season. That certainly didn't help any either here. It's probably a combination of everything here. Do I think the change can help? Well, you know, we only remember the times it does. You know, oh, yeah, change is definitely. We remember this, and this guy, they made this change, or he went on a run. Sure, we remember that. But you don't remember the 80% of the other time where it did nothing. That it wasn't the coach's fault. You know, so sometimes you'll get an initial rush, but then once that wears off, it goes back to being the same problems you had here. So I think you'll see a mixture of both. I am surprised. Not that I thought the Kings were world beaters, but I thought if they were going to have problems, it would be at the end of the season. You know, because older team, they'd wear down. The fact that it's at the beginning of the season, that is a concern here. I think that's probably my biggest alarm thing is why. If you look at the roster here, the roster looks solid. Not great, but solid. It can't all be because of Dustin Brown. And Jack Campbell's played pretty solid net and plays him quick. So what is the issue here? It does seem to be something beyond just the players.
Yeah, you know, I think you hit most of the major points. I can't help but wonder if it is at least somewhat of a system situation, a type of approach to the game, you know, because although Stevens did have, you know, he was a little bit more of a disciplinary-ish guy, but when you compare it to the backdrop of Daryl Sutter, he wasn't remotely as much of a disciplinarian as Sutter was. And he essentially ran the same system on the ice with some tweaks to sort of, at least in theory, open up the game more. But this is still, you know, relatively an older and slower team, even though they've tried to get a little bit younger outside of their sort of core veterans. You know, but even some of the guys that have a little bit of speed, at least comparatively speaking, are not exactly speedsters. And more important, they're not, you know, or at least haven't been so far, much of offensive, contributors. So I do wonder, you know, Desjardins, not that he is a pushover coach, not that he's not going to hold players accountable, but he's definitely much more of a player's coach. And I certainly thought, and I remember expressing this at the time, that it was a little bit unfortunate with him in Vancouver, because I felt when he was coaching in Vancouver, the management team and the ownership was still sort of caught in between of not quite fully committing to that that rebuild, which they really need to do. And I actually felt that hamstrung him on the ice. You know, so what are we doing here? Are we trying to develop the younger players, or are we trying to, go with the veterans and sort of make the playoffs? You know, so I think sort of not being in that situation, I expect to have at least a little bit better idea of what he can be as a coach. Interesting enough, they also brought in Marco Sturm, who has been coaching the German national team for the last couple of years and pretty highly thought of, and he was brought in as the assistant here to replace one of the other assistants who was fired. And there's already sort of speculation that Desjardins will be the interim coach this year. And unless he sort of blows the Kings away or they're really impressed with his coaching job, that Sturm is already the leading contender for next year. If they were to sort of move on here, since Sturm apparently is considered sort of an up-and-comer as far as head coaches are aware of. But, you know, you look at this roster, and I think your assessment really kind of nailed it, you know, for the most part. But sort of digging a little bit deeper, George, you know, I mean, Dustin Brown, who I've always liked as a player, but, you know, was last year's first half of the season, because don't forget, he did fade as the season went on. Was it the last third of the season or the full second half of the season? You can debate amongst yourself, but was that just sort of a blip in a map of what's sort of been the last 5 years of declining offensive production? You know, Tyler Toffoli, who, again, another player that I like, I think he's a legitimate NHLer, but where has his offense gone? You know, I know he scored 25 goals last year, bouncing back from, you know, a disappointing year, year and a half, but he hasn't been that much on the map. Pearson, and Pearson's not a guy I ever expected to be a, you know, pushing to be a 30-goal scorer, but I thought he would be a guy who'd, you know, score 20 and maybe and push 45, 50 points playing on a solid second line with a guy like Toffoli and Carter, and he has sort of flatlined in terms of any production here. Not that we expected Kovalchuk to sort of be a world beater and be the player he was when the last time we saw him in the NHL, you know, but he hasn't exactly lit the world on fire a little bit. So, you know, Jeff Carter, you know, who's sometimes been a slow starter, so I'm not sort of like overly worried about Carter, but he himself hasn't lit the world on fire. So, you know, now you're looking at Kopitar as being like the only guy with a heartbeat here, offensively speaking. You know, I think part of it does go to being so successful for so long, having successful 5-6-7 year run where you're one of the better teams in the NHL and you're trading away your first round draft pick. You know, in fact, in the last 10 years, I read a stat earlier, the only two first round draft picks that the LA Kings, draft in last decade who are playing in the NHL are playing for other teams. Zykov for the Carolina Hurricanes, and actually I'm slipping my mind who the second player was, but they traded away as well. So you're not infusing this team with any true young talent. Yes, you have Velarde, who's been injured all year with his back injury and hoping to come back sometime in the next 2 to 4 weeks, you know, and their first-round draft pick from this year, who looks like he could be, you know, pretty good as well. But they're not expected to step into the lineup and really make a big impact here. So I do think it's kind of, at least from my perspective, George, you know, kind of split down the middle of one of those things of like, yeah, I can kind of see why this might be the coach's fault, or at least a lot of it at the coach's fault, and put it at the coach's feet. But just as much well, we can't fire 20 to 22 players in the middle of a season. So we have to make this move. So I am really curious. I'm not sort of shoveling the dirt on the Kings just yet, but to the point that you made earlier, George, I'm not so sure that this is going to completely rejuvenize reinvigorate and rejuvenize the team, and they're going to be a surefire playoff team by the time we reach the trade deadline, let alone the end of the season. My only question is this going to be the start of a big, long, ugly, changeover, just waiting for those veteran contracts, as I was saying earlier in the show, to run out so you can move on? Because I don't know who might trade these players if you get to the point of a sell-off later in the year. All right, folks, let's turn our attention to the fancier part, starting off with the IR and lines updates as we usually do. Not too bad of a report for today, but starting off in Anaheim, well, it really is always bad when you start off with Anaheim, so it's unfortunate they start the alphabet for us. But Getzlaff with the upper body injury is listed as day-to-day, missed one game, considered questionable for Tuesday's and Wednesday's game. If he can't play, I would expect a similar top line to be rolled out with Henrique rolling up to center Raquel and Aberg. Comtois with the lower body injury, still in the IR, has missed the last 5 games, but he has been practicing with the team and it is believed that he will return for tomorrow's game. Part of that is fueled not just by the practicing, but the demotion that they made of one player yesterday. So look for that. And again, I'm not expecting him to come in and sort of save that offense in and of himself. In Boston, just a little tweak to the second line. Nordstrom moved up to play with Krejci and DeBrusque, and I'm not telling any fantasy owners to go ahead and pick him up, but he did play reasonably well and scored a couple goals, you know, for the 4 or 5 games that he was playing with those two a couple of weeks ago. Heinen moved back down to the third line with Backes and Bjork. In Calgary, Dubé with an upper body injury. Kind of going through concussion protocol is what is believed but not confirmed happening, as he was sort of smashed into the boards by Duncan Keith head first in their last game and ended up having to leave the game early. In Carolina, looking a month down the line, Victor Rask with that hand injury that's caused him to miss the whole season is expected back by the first week of the season, which should just be a nice addition to that top nine. Obviously, this team has started off in a pretty solid fashion, but after that A-hole line – the offense has kind of dried up since, you know, for the last couple of weeks. And frankly, I expected that, you know, Jordan Stahl and Justin Williams' line to kind of cool off as they have. And Victor Rask hasn't sort of developed in that top six forward that Carolina was hoping for, but he does have some offensive pulse, so that should be a welcome addition when he does return in about a month. In Chicago, shuffling up the lines a little bit to look more like it was expected to start the season, as Brendan said, does return to the top line with Jonathan Toews and DeBrincat, and after a one-game healthy scratch, Nick Schmaltz does re-enter the lineup on the second line left wing with Anisimov and Patrick Kane. In Dallas, rattle off with that lower body injury is out for the moment. Expect to miss another 2 to 3 games. He's missed seven of the last 8 games, and as I said, expected to miss at least 2 more games before he does return for the Dallas Stars. In Detroit, Athuasio with an undisclosed injury. They are hoping to have him back by this weekend. That is predicated that there is no setbacks during this week. He's expected to practice both Wednesday and Thursday. As long as everything goes okay with that, expect him back in the lineup. And Franz Nielsen, who also had an undisclosed injury, is expected back tomorrow for the Red Wings as well. Interesting, in Edmonton, obviously I talked about them a bit on Friday during this report, and I was saying that Ratty was about to come back, and they certainly could use him because, you know, the right wing has sort of been a black hole for a team that's otherwise turned things around since the first 2 or 3 games of the season where they did not look so good. But Ratty was activated off the IR, but he was not played. He is expected to re-enter the lineup sometime in the next game or two. Is expected, you know, the next game, but it hasn't been confirmed. But the interesting thing in the interim is the fact that Kagula, playing last few games on the top line with McDavid, does have 5 goals in the last 5 games, 2 multi-goal games. And Chiasson, who's been playing on the second line with Drysdale, does have 6 goals in the last 7 games. So if you're somebody like me who actually had Ratty on his IR, just took him off the IR, in the league that I'm in with George, I was planning to reinsert him in the lineup, expecting him to go right back on that McDavid line. I'm hedging my bet, so if I'm in a weekly league, I'm not sure if I'm sort of just reinserting him. Now, I know his ownership percentage is a little bit on the lower side, you know, partly because of the injury, and even though we expect him to play with McDavid long-term, you got to show me a little something before he's being snapped up in every league. But this obviously is an interesting situation I'll watch, since Yamamoto and Puljujarvi, Jarvi, who obviously got the first opportunities to play in the top 6 on the right wing, really sort of did nothing. You know, but I think there were some doubts that Kagula is going to remain this high in the lineup, and Chiasson is really more historically more of a bottom six forward. So I do think Ratty does eventually get back onto that McDavid line. I just don't know if it's going to be this week. For the Montreal Canadiens, also another just a little tweak that I think is really for Kotkaniemi. Lekkonen, who had been playing with Domi and Drouin, and that line has been playing really well, switched down to play with Kotkaniemi and Armia, with Hudden moving up to that line with Domi and Drouin. And this is just, again, a situation, sort of a heads-up for fans and fantasy owners just to watch and see if anything that develops. Drouin and Domi obviously are developing really nice chemistry, so if they find that third line mate to really sort of produce, it could be a potential pickup. So I'm really just telling you to keep an eye on Hudden, not to go out and pick him up. In Nashville, as I teased on Friday, I was having trouble finding some information on Arvidsson, which made me suspicious whether this was just going to be a 1 or 2 game miss. It still might be, but Arvidsson has been moved to the IR with that lower body injury, but they did make it retroactive to last Tuesday, meaning that he could come off the IR at any time, and they're not playing until Thursday. So they did make a move calling somebody up, and I think this is really more of a safety thing. So playing things safe, obviously if you're in a weekly league, you're sitting Arvidsson this week, can't take any chances. But I think this is – we hope he's going to be ready for Thursday by calling somebody up in case he can't go. In the meantime, Fiala has now been given a chance, and at least in their last game, on the top line with Johansson and Forsberg. In New Jersey, Zacha, their number one draft pick from a couple of years ago, who has not exactly lit the world on fire, sent to the minors So that's certainly and certainly is justified with the in terms of the point production that he has not given us, but a little bit surprising, especially, you know, teams in major cities tend to sort of not do this because they're worried about the negative PR, but I do think it is the right thing to do. And it did seem like Zacha was taking it with a very positive attitude. Also for the New Jersey Devils, Jasper Bratt with that jaw injury is practicing, but it does look like it's going to be at least another two or three games before he returns to the lineup for the Devils. For the New York Rangers, Brett Howden has been a nice surprise for the Rangers with 9 points in the first 14 games. Upper body injury got him listed as day-to-day. It is speculated but not confirmed that it is a concussion. For the Ottawa Senators, and I did mention this on Friday's show, Brady Tkachuk with that leg injury is hoping to return sometime this week. He is practicing with the team in a non-contact jersey at least the last couple of days, and the rookie Formenton had been returned to juniors. And Bouchard said, the coach did say, hey, I kind of want to keep him, but I didn't quite have a whole say in here, and it might be the right thing to do anyway long-term, especially considering the outlook for the team for the season. In Pittsburgh, Phil Kessel was given a maintenance day yesterday, and it really sort of put up some red flags for a number of people around the league taking notice of it. He has been declared as fine. It really was truly a maintenance day. He is expected to play no problem for the next game. But Brassard, with that lower body injury, is on the IR, as we've told you, has missed the last couple of games. But the red flag here is the fact that it's been 11 days since he has skated. This isn't considered a long-term injury with a lower body injury, but the team has said we are sort of taking a cautious approach here with Brassard. It makes you wonder if it's the hamstring again that hit him last year after they traded for him. And, they didn't rush him back last year, but it did seem like he came back and he certainly was not fully healthy. It was the playoffs, so that's the things that you do. So they're sort of going out of their way to be cautious here. In San Jose, Hurdle with an undisclosed injury. It is suspected to be a head injury. Left the game Saturday, listed as day-to-day. There is supposed to be an update today, but there was no update before airtime today. But what might be the more interesting thing in San Jose is that Coach DeBoer finally listened to our show and finally took my advice. You know, you got a guy like Joe Thornton at the end of his career, Hall of Famer. It's not uncommon to sort of maybe bow to their wishes and what you think that they might prefer, or just be hesitant to sort of put them lower in the lineup. But I mentioned this a couple times before Thornton came back of, hey, you know he's going to go on that top line with Pavelski. Pavelski likes playing with him. He likes playing with Pavelski. And not only did they do that, but they moved Kane down in the lineup. They moved Meyer up to the top line, even though he's playing great on the second line of Couturier and Hurdle. And what do you know? I mean, the team still played all right, but they was – obviously not a smooth transition, and it was difficult. So what did DeBoer do in the middle of the last game? He moved Thornton to be the third line center, like I've been saying since the middle of the summer. I love you, Joe, but it just seems like the right move. I expect this to continue and to stick. It'll be interesting to see if it plays out that way. So it does look like the current lines are going to be Evander Kane back up at the top line with Pavelski and Donskoy, the line that played so well at the end of last year, and assuming Hurdle is okay, being on the second line with Couturier and Meyer and Thornton centering LeBanc and Sorensen. And I do think this is a potential boon for LeBanc in particular. Again, this is assuming, and we don't know this yet, that these lines are going to stick at least for a little while. If that is the case, you take the pressure off Thornton and you give LeBanc a prime time center, even though he's not what he used to be. He's still very, very good. We still know that. So what I'm driving at here is I'm not saying running out and picking up LeBanc, but definitely put LeBanc on your watch list if you're in a deeper league and you have holes in your roster. I can't criticize you for maybe taking a chance on it now. Not that that's what I'm specifically suggesting, but I do think this is a smart way to go for the San Jose Sharks. For the St. Louis Blues, Braden Schenn with an upper body injury listed as day-to-day is considered doubtful for Tuesday. He could play, but he didn't practice today, and Yao did say he thought it was doubtful. In the meantime, because of that injury, O'Reilly is centering Tarasenko with Schwartz, and your second line, at least at practice day, is the rookie Thomas with Fabris on the left side and Perrone on the right side. Sanford, Bozak, and Steen is your third line for the St. Louis Blues right now. And as we know, the one thing that's going at least pretty well for the Blues is the offense, and this does seem like it could potentially continue that. For the Tampa Bay Lightning, Victor Hedman with the upper body injury doesn't look like he – they were hoping he was going to be back for the start of this week, but they're saying that early – the earliest he'll be back is late in this week for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Palat, who all signs look like he was going to play this weekend, was held out as well, still listed as day-to-day. He's also considered doubtful for Tuesday, but considered likely to come back at the end of the week as well. And what do you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning, they make yet another. Yzerman might have moved on. You know, yes, he's still a consultant, but Brisebois is now the GM. Don't, haven't missed a beat in terms of re-signing guys to really nice contracts. Gord re-signing with the team, 6 years, $5.16 million. If he is the player he has started out to be this year and was last year, that is, once again, a very good bargain contract. Good news for the Vegas Golden Knights. Pacioretty with the upper body injury still listed officially as day-to-day, has missed the last four games, but he's expected back for Tuesday's game, was practicing on the second line with Hula, and recently returning Alex Tuck as well. In Vancouver, I don't really have too much information here, but it was noticeable and reported that Boeser did miss practice today. I have no idea if this is a maintenance day, a personal day, or you know, if it's an actual injury here. So this is a situation to sort of keep an eye on if you are a fantasy owner in particular and own him. And finally, in Washington, tweaking the top line, Verano was doing all right up there with 4 points in the last five games, playing on the top line with Kunetsov and Ovechkin, but I have to wonder if his minus three from their last game was an impetus to have him drop down to the fourth line. Yaskin moved to the top line, at least temporarily speaking, for the Washington Capitals. I was going to recommend Verana as one of the guys to pick up, as his ownership is still relatively low and he was at least producing at least somewhat, you know, so she'd be available for a lot of teams. Washington has a good schedule this week. They're also playing four games this week, so he seems like a great streamer, except for now he's not on the top line, which is unfortunate, at least for fantasy owners, because it was could have been a really nice streamer pickup. Also for the Washington Capitals, Travis Boyd, finally returning, getting set to play his first game of the season, and certainly be welcomed back as your fourth-line center for the Capitals. All right, folks, there's your IR and line updates report. Turning our attention to the goalie report. And, George, before we jump into what's going on between the pipes around the NHL, as I teased at the top of the show, I want to ask you a little bit more about the goalie equipment issue. And I know you sort of brought it up at least in passing a couple of times this year already. But in the last week or so, there's been a couple of articles that have come out that has sort of really detailed the new equipment, specifically the you know, the upper body equipment since last year, sort of like the gloves and the pads in particular that were sort of shrunken. And that was the new equipment that they'd used. And this year they moved on, you know, to the upper body pads, specifically for the midsection. And George, I'm kind of curious if you're thinking, is there any real issue here, or is this just sort of a learning curve thing for goalies, since, again, we're really just a month into the season, 12, 13, 14 games for most teams. However, there have been a number of goalies, Brian Elliott, Bishop, Bobrovsky, Murray, Casey DeSmith, Hellebuck, Brisebois, Holtby, Reimer, Mike Smith, all complaining and talking to the league about the issues here. The chest protector is now essentially, I've heard it compared to like essentially a Kevlar vest that you know, the police will wear to protect them. And the fact that a lot of these goalies are just getting a lot more bruised than they normally do. Now, obviously, even in the old equipment, you'd still going to be getting some bruising now, at any time you have a solidly frozen rubber puck that's shot at you at 80 to 100 miles an hour, you're going to get bruises. I think anybody who's played hockey and any regular fan, you know, would know this, but that it seems to be a lot more than usual, and that a lot of goalies are worried about these accumulating bumps and bruises and even potentially broken bones. So, I mean, at least that's the party line. You know, I've seen a lot of people talking about this on social media as well as the articles that I've sort of been referring to. But, you know, still, I mean, this could just be like, oh, man, we're a month into a new season with a new thing, and we've had a decade. We've had a generation of players, at least goaltenders, playing with these bigger and bigger pads. And, yes, in the last few years, everything started getting tailored down, but not to this degree. So, again, my question is to you, now that we have a month or so of the season as information, is this an issue that is legitimate and the NHL is going to have to sort of tweak a little bit and fix? Or, again, is this just a learning curve adjustment period for goaltenders, and by the time we reach March, it's going to be a relative afterthought, at least in your opinion? So, George, as much as you know, what do you think about this situation?
You know, it's a little tough. Part of me does think it's just the goalies, you know, suck it up. All right, stop complaining. You had it way too good for way too long, wearing pads that were way – I mean, come on. This is a joke how big. Some of these guys look like the Michelin man out there. You know, so it was just – they were too big. Now, I get it. Players nowadays not only shoot harder, but they shoot higher than ever before. You know, I think goalies also, they get hit higher because every goalie plays the V. They go down. So, therefore, they're going to take those pucks in the upper chest. You know, that's just the way it is. Now, I also wonder this. If it's not really, anything that's changed, the fact that the pads had to be, they had to change pads, right? So they had to go from whatever, the big pads to the smaller pads, and has maybe the technology not gotten there yet where whatever they're using, the padding, is just not strong enough yet. You know, it was because when you think about it, with the old pads, what the NHL wanted to cut down wasn't so much the bulk in front on the body. They wanted to cut down the extra bulk that was away from your body. You know, when you went down, all of a sudden, even though you were, you know, 6 feet tall, it looked like you were 8 feet tall because the padding went up. That wasn't covering your body. It was covering air. That's what the NHL wanted to get rid of, the padding that was covering air. So why are you getting hurt then? You understand what I'm saying here? The padding that's on your body should have remained the same. You know, so if you weren't getting hit before, then you shouldn't be getting hurt now. But the only thing you wanted to get rid of was the extras on the cheater, you know, that extra half inch that's on the cheater, the extra on the leg pads. That's, you know, instead of being 12 inches, it was 14 inches wide. So they're not getting hit on their body. So I don't understand where this pain's coming from. Like I said, has the technology with the change in pads just screwed up some where the padding isn't as good as it used to be? And is that what's hurting them? Because, if they had 3/4 inch pads in front, you know, now it's down to half inch. I don't think the NHL was really mandating that on the body. It was more the extra stuff away from the body they were trying to get rid of. But I wonder if that's been the problem. You know, I don't know exactly what the size padding was on your body, you know, on your chest, on your stomach, on your thighs. I don't know what the size padding were allowed then and now, but if that's gone down, okay, then I could see that. Then maybe the NHL is going to have to allow that. Because in my mind, what the NHL wanted to get rid of was all the extra cheater stuff. I said, on the trapper, you know, on the blocker, on the leg pads, on the other, you know, so that's when you go down, like Garth Snow back in the day, when he went down in the V, all of a sudden his shoulder pads went up 2 feet. It was a joke. You know, and other goalies have done the same thing here. They have stuff in between their legs now, or did, that would, you know, spread out when they went down. Once again, it gives them extra blockers. It's blocking air. It's not blocking their body. You know, the padding on a goalie is to block their body. A little extra than that, but pretty much block the body, protect the body, not protect air. You know, I think that was the problem the NHL was having here. Now, let's just say that the NHL realizes, they find out, oh, wow, this is causing injuries. I don't think they want to go back the way it was, because I think the NHL realizes that, hey, you know, scoring is up this year. It's up pretty dramatically this year. And that's a good thing, right? I think we all realize that the scoring in the NHL needed to go up. You know, now, the first thing you have to do, all right, is it up because of the shrinking goalie pads? Is that why it's up? You know, or is that the sole reason, the main reason it's up? You know, I'm sure there's always more than one reason, but is that the main reason it's up? Is it going to continue this way? Once again, we're only a month in, small sample size. Now, if the NHL comes to that conclusion, then they have two options here. Assuming they want the scoring to remain the same, but they want to protect their goalies, well, then you got to make the nets bigger. You know, if you have to go back to the old equipment that the goalies had, then you have to make the nets bigger. I still think you have a choice here. I know this is getting off topic a little bit, but it's related. So if you think the goalies are going to have to go back to the extra equipment and the extra thickness, whatever it might be, and I think it's just goalies bitching about, you know, because they're giving up more goals now. So it's not in their best interest. You know, even if they weren't getting hurt, I think they'd be saying they are. Or they don't realize they were taking the same bumps and bruises last year. So I think it is all BS, or at least mainly BS. But let's say it's not. then the Yankees are going to have to go, instead of 6x4, 6.5x4.5. I know it sounds ugly, you know, but then again, you know, pitcher mound in baseball is 60 feet, 6 inches. You know, a football field isn't 50 yards wide, it's 53.25. You know, we always have weird measurements in sports. So I don't understand why baseball has to stick to the 6x4 thing, or hockey has to stick by the 6x4 thing. And one thing I complain about in all sports, Scott, is that, you know, when you think, like I said, baseball, 60 feet, 6 inches, bases are 90 feet. Hockey hasn't changed forever. You know, ranks are 200 feet, 6x4 for the net. We've been doing that for 100 years. So we've never accommodated for the fact that human beings are bigger, stronger, faster. They are. You know, so the game has changed. Goalies are immensely – forget the equipment. Goalies themselves are immensely bigger than they were 30 years ago, more or less 100 years ago when the rules were set up here. So we haven't – the rules haven't – or I shouldn't say the rules. The playing rules, the playing size surface. You know how I feel that the surface should be bigger to accommodate this. Well, so should the net to accommodate for that. So if you do need to protect your goalies, if the NHL ever were to go back to saying, okay, we got to protect the goalies more, they should be allowed to wear the old equipment, then the nets have to be made bigger. Because, you know, I'm not saying I want to see 8-7 games, Scott. No, not every night anyway. But I don't want to see 2-1 games every night also. You know, getting a 4-3 game is a big thing. Wow, it's 4-3. Woof, high-scoring game. I don't want that either. You know, you want a happy medium here where you do get some goals scored some nights. So I think the Angels are in a tough spot because assuming it's true the goalies are getting hurt, you know the NHLPA is bitching about it because you don't want players getting hurt, and I agree with that. But I do think the same thing, all these goalies, and it's not every one of them, by the way, it's a few, saying that they are getting hurt more than they're going back to the old equipment in practice. Well, I have no problem. You can use whatever you want in practice. You want to bring a couch cushion out there in practice. Go ahead. What do I care? You know, but if it's true they are getting hurt, then something does need to be done. And I wouldn't mind a radical change because I think the NHL has all sports, I think, actually need it. I think this culture, we get so engraced in not wanting change, you know, keeping everything the same. Which is kind of idiotic. I mean, like I said, human beings have changed size-wise. It's just what we do. How they train is immensely better. So I wouldn't mind a radical change. But in the end, Scott, I doubt anything comes of anything. I think it'll go away. The goalies will adjust to it. They'll figure it out. You know, maybe better equipment will come here, but the nets will still be 6x4, and the goalies are not going to – some will try and cheat. But as far as the rules are concerned, the goalies will not be allowed to wear bigger equipment.
A lot of interesting points that you brought up that I really kind of enjoyed, especially the talk about the, you know, sort of possibly making the nets bigger in general, because you're right. Everybody is, you know, bigger, stronger, faster. And I remember when I was a kid, it just seemed like, now I know it wasn't the case with all the goalies, but it certainly seemed that goalies in particular were a lot smaller. I remember when Sean Burke came into the league and he was like 6'4", and everybody was saying, a guy that big can't play the, you know, the net. He's just too big. He'll never be able to move enough. And he played on his knees, and he just stood up, and he blocked the whole damn net. And it was, you know, not that all goaltenders are that big these days, you know, but they're certainly a lot bigger, you know, than the smaller guys. The Mike Vernons of the world, would it seem like they're much more likely to be his size at like 5'9", 5'10". You know, then the 6'1", 6'2", as we have for the most players. I tend to agree with you that I think this is sort of like right in between, because, you know, certainly last year in particular with the leg pads, because you're right, the NHL was trying to get rid of the extra bulk, you know, that bulk that you're already just detailing that, you know, on your leg pads that, you know, would essentially make you a couple of inches higher, you know, just because your leg pads are so thick. I think it's the same thing here with the chest pads. And when it came to the leg pads, because some players were complaining that there was like a little bit, they were feeling it a little bit more, it had to do with the layering, or at least that ended up being the solution for most of the goalies that were complaining. So I'm wondering if that's the same thing here, that it's just a matter of the material and the layering of the material, and that maybe you can add just a little bit of layering and maybe split the difference between the overly huge that we had and maybe that what we have right now, which might be a little too thick or too thin, and maybe that's kind of the issue here, you know. So I do think it's a, you know, sort of 50-50 of learning curve, you know, and getting used to it, as well as, you know, maybe, okay, maybe we need to tweak things. Because, again, you know, you sometimes really don't know what you have until you're actually in game action. You know, the same thing as coming back from an injury. You might feel great. The doctors might have checked you out as 100%, but until you get on that ice or that field, whatever sport you're playing, and you're testing that knee, you're testing that back, you're testing that arm in real high-level competition, you don't know what you have, and I think it's the same thing here with the equipment. All right, George, let's turn our attention to the actual goalie report. What do you have to tell us this week? Any significant goalie information that we need to be aware of between the pipes around the NHL? George?
All right, goaltending news around the NHL. Not a terrible week unless you're the Philadelphia Flyers. And then they're a mess. I mean, the Flyers are a mess. Elliot apparently got hurt in practice. So he's out tonight. Once again, state secrets, God forbid they should tell us what it is. Nyquist, also undisclosed on IR. So they're without their top two goaltenders, which means you're going to see a lot, I assume a lot of Calvin Picard. Alex Lyon was called up. Now, those of you, and listen, I've been one of these wondering about Connor Hart. I can see why they're not bringing him up. Hart is struggling down at the AHL. 3.77 goals against average, .882 save percentage. So those are not numbers worthy of being called up. So I'm not going to knock Philly for doing that. Hart needs to play better down there. But it does make you wonder, man, if he would have I don't think you need to excel, but just take a goal. Me at 2.77 goals against and over 900 save percentage. It's not asking a lot. You know, not even AHL all-star numbers. But if he had those numbers, I do wonder if Philadelphia would have called him up. And Philadelphia, you know, they're a mess. And, you know, Scott, we say this over and over again. At least I do. If you don't have a goalie in the NHL, you just can't win. Flyers came into the season high hopes in my mind is always teams that are Stanley Cup contenders. Flyers weren't that, but they're certainly playoff contenders. And listen, they're not in the tank by any means. They're 6-7-1, 13 points. They're only 4 points out of first place. So it's not like they're in trouble here. But you have to think. You have to think this is a team that's trying to find goaltending. But the problem is you already have three on your roster. What are you going to do? I mean, can you afford another goaltender with Elliott on your roster, with Neuvirth on the roster? Picard, I guess you could let go. But I wonder if they do end up making a trade, which is pure speculation. I've heard nothing about this, but I wonder if they do. If part of that trade, and it may cost them more to do so now, would be that the team they trade with has to take on one of these goaltenders. You know, and once again, that will cost them a higher price, even draft picks, whatever they decide to give up, because you're asking the team to take on a player that they probably don't want. All right, so I wonder that. So anyway, so the Flyers, they have some issues in net. Carolina, Mrazek has a lower body injury. He's not practicing. Don't know how severe that is yet, but Mrazek's out. Darling's going to start. In the meantime, Arizona, Kemper's going to start Monday. Just giving a day off of Ranta. Nothing wrong with him. Ranta will probably play Thursday against Philadelphia. Arizona and Philadelphia play. It's a weird back-to-back. They play tonight, and then they play Thursday. You know, rather than back-to-back nights, or at least – only one day off. They get 2 days off before they play each other again. Florida, Luongo's back. We said that on Friday's show as he was playing during our show. Played well. Hutchinson sent down to the AHL. It was kind of curious. I guess we all knew they'd probably send Hutchinson. But when Luongo was out for a while there, Hutchinson was the one getting the starts there, not James Reimer. But anyway, back to Hutchinson there. For the Islanders, Leonard came back on Saturday as a backup. So he's back to backing up Greece. Greece is going to start tonight against Montreal. The Islanders are going to go with the hot goaltender. You know, that's just what they are. And it's a smart thing to do. Neither one is going to, you know, I don't think either one's going to separate themselves. Barry Trotz has done a wonderful job of actually having a defensive system here, which is good for him. But neither one has truly separated themselves. It'll be the hot goaltender there. And right now, that one is Thomas Greece. Okay, New Jersey Devils. Kincaid's going to start Monday. Schneider's going to start tomorrow. Schneider's back. He's the starter you want. Kincaid has really not played well for a while now. It may not be all his fault, the Devils as a whole. You know, they lost to the Islanders 3-0. That's certainly not a goaltender's fault. Didn't score any goals there. But Schneider's back. He's the starter. He came back. He's the one you want there. Washington Copley starts tonight. Once again, nothing wrong with Hopi there. Just a start. For Montreal, they play back-to-back. Niemi starts tonight against the Islanders. Price goes against the Rangers tomorrow. So once again, no news there. It's the way it is. Khudobin's going to start. We're pretty sure Khudobin's going to start for Dallas tonight. They haven't really announced that fully yet, but that's what we expect. And you may want to watch Edmonton. You know, when you're looking for a goaltender, I know this is sort of the next segment, but if you're looking for a goaltender, Koskinen's getting some starts there. You know, not pure back-to-backs. You know, I'm not saying he's going to start over Talbot, not saying that at all. But it's just something you may want to watch. If you have Talbot or you need a goaltender, you want to take a chance on somebody getting maybe a full-time job, take a look at Koskinen.
Some really great tidbits in particular in that goal report, George. You know, certainly starting with the with what you're saying about the Edmonton goalie situation right there. But I was actually going to specifically, I know I hadn't told you about it ahead of time, but I was specifically actually going to follow up the goals report asking you about the Islanders goaltenders because, you know, it's hard not to notice that both of them are in the top 10 in save percentage. You know, Greiss is under 1.85 goals against average, and Lerner's 2.45 goals against average isn't terrible. You know, that's solidly average. You know, so I was sort of going to ask you, about the situation in general, and if you thought specifically if anybody was going to, likely take over. Obviously, you already answered these questions, you know, because I really feel that at least in terms of streamer status, let alone third goalie on your fantasy team, they're making themselves worthy. And I thought that would sort of be a thing, but I didn't think it would be a thing that I would legitimately be thinking until at the end of the year where Trotz's system really started sort of, seeping in. Because we know, like with new coaches, you know, it tends to take, 20 games, 30 games, 40 games to really start mastering a system. And the Islanders haven't had a defensive system in I don't know how long, you know, and you know, even though Greiss and Lerner are playing well, you know, I don't think anybody's mistaking them as potentially elite goaltenders. So I really like that you sort of, dove into that before I even had a chance to ask, because I do think it should be on at least, fantasy owner streaming radar. And like I said, I still get it if you're not, committing these guys, even as a number three goaltender, but I definitely like that breakdown. All right, George, you know where I'm going now, asking for goalie recommendations for this week, and it looks like we have at least some potential possibilities this week as we finally have what looks like a normal NHL schedule. 11 teams playing four games this week, only four teams with just two games this week. So it looks like, and I haven't looked at the next couple of weeks' schedule, yet, so I don't know if this is just an aberration or finally getting to a normalized schedule. But for fantasy owners looking to stream goaltenders, get a backup goalie starter, too, to cover an injury, whatever the case may be, or a low-owned number one goaltender to stream, it looks like there's some potential here with those 11 teams playing four games, George. When you're looking at the landscape of streaming goaltenders for this week, George, what do you see and what do you like? George?
All right. As you mentioned, 11 teams have four games here, pretty much a third of the league here. So we're getting there. We're getting there. I'm still afraid that Wednesday is going to be a nightmare in the NHL. I'm done bitching about the scheduling. Anyway, team number one, Arizona. Already mentioned, Kemper's going to get a start tonight. He's going to start again over the weekend. They play back-to-back against Pittsburgh and Washington. Granted, not great starts. Pittsburgh, Washington, even Philadelphia. But Kemper's going to fall into the desperate category. You just have no other options because you know you're going to get two starts. If you're looking for county stats rather than quantity rather than quality, you can go with Kemper there. Boston, they're back-to-backs over the weekend. Toronto and Vegas. We've already talked about Halak. He's probably, if you have Rask, he'll be picked up anyway. He's been playing out better than Rask for a while now, and there's some calling for Halak to start. Rask seems to be turning around a little bit. But once again, Halak is an option there. Dallas, mentioned Hudobin starts tonight against Boston. Bishop most likely tomorrow against Columbus. Don't know if Hudobin gets another start. They don't have another back-to-back. They play San Jose Thursday, Nashville on Saturday. So for all we know, Bishop gets those starts. But it's something, once again, you could look into. Edmonton, we already talked about Koskinen. They play back-to-back. Talbot's going tonight. I think Koskinen's going to get Tampa Bay tomorrow. Lucky him. Once again, no other back-to-back. They play Florida at Florida and Colorado Thursday and Sunday. But Koskinen you have to look into anyway because, once again, he's eating into some of those starts for Talbot. Minnesota, we're going to pass on them. I don't think we're all that worried there. Their back-to-back is Thursday and Friday against the Kings and Anaheim. They have the California trip. We already talked about Montreal, right? Niemi's going to get the start against the Islanders tonight. Montreal's playing better than we thought. I don't know how much longer this can last, but better than we thought. Niemi starts tonight, but there's not another. If we knew he was going to get that Thursday start against Buffalo, that'd be interesting. But for all we know, it's priced the rest of the week. New Jersey Devils, Kincaid gets Pittsburgh tonight. We're staying away from that. I think Schneider very well could start the next three games. They're bringing along Schneider. I wouldn't say slowly, but not fully integrating him yet. But still, if you have Schneider, you want to start him this week. I don't have an issue with it. because he gets the nice Ottawa start. Then he gets Toronto. That's not fun in Winnipeg. So it's that Ottawa start that I'm thankful for. If Schneider was starting tonight against Pittsburgh, I would sit him. I would absolutely sit him. Pittsburgh, Toronto, and Winnipeg, I'm going to pass, especially for a Devils team that right now isn't scoring goals. Ottawa, no thank you. San Jose, Aaron Dell, their backup is Thursday. Their back-to-back is Thursday, Friday at Dallas at St. Louis. I'm certainly interested in Aaron Dell here. Maybe you get lucky and get a second start there. Vegas, I'll pass against my channel in Boston over the weekend with Subban. Washington, they have four games. You Copley, thankfully, is going to get one because they're no back-to-backs. They have that Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, that what I like to call the perfect schedule for a starter, but they're still going with the backup here, Copley against Edmonton tonight. So you're going to get one. You know, I don't think you get another. So if you want that Edmonton start, fine. So those are your goalies there. There's four teams that have only two games this week, Buffalo, Chicago, Nashville, Winnipeg. And like I said, the goalies you're looking for, Kemper if you want quantity. Halak should already be taken. Koskinen is the guy who I would see is the sneaky pickup. You know, the guy who's more than a backup, going to get one start anyway, but you might get a little extra out of him. So he's someone I'm looking at here. And Kincaid is the one guy where even though you know he's starting tonight, hasn't played well of late, team's not playing well, I'm going to pass on him.
All right, George, thanks for the goalie recommendations. As always, I'll let you go as I wrap things up with the skater recommendations. Looking at the landscape, George already went through all the teams that have four games this week, the teams that jump out at me in particular that have particularly good offensively potential schedules, Boston playing Dallas, Vancouver, Toronto, and the Vegas Golden Knights all at home as well. Minnesota on that West Coast swing, playing all four their games on the road. Starting off with San Jose, that'll probably be a pretty tough game, but L.A., obviously, they just made their coaching change. They've been playing really bad, although who knows, that coaching change could invigorate them. Anaheim has had their issues, especially with all the injuries that they've had, and St. Louis has been, well, flat-out bad when it comes to goaltending and defense, so I kind of like them as well, and the Washington Capitals playing all at home, Edmonton, Pittsburgh, Columbus, and Arizona. Edmonton playing better, but you can still score against them. Pittsburgh, sort of same deal. Columbus, Bobrovsky has been playing better the last couple of starts, but overall for the balance of the season hasn't been great. Arizona has been playing pretty good defensively the whole season, but still, I still kind of like those teams. In terms of the teams that have just three games this week that have some nice schedules, Carolina, St. Louis and Chicago on the road, Detroit at home. I really like that schedule in particular. Tampa Bay playing at home against Edmonton, the Islanders, even though the Islanders are playing much better defensively than we expect overall. And Ottawa, that is appealing to me as well. And offensively, St. Louis playing Carolina, San Jose, and Minnesota isn't as good as the others, but is intriguing as well. As far as specific player recommendations, certainly my top choice this week, playing well since he came back from missing the beginning of the season, Alex Tuck for the Vegas Golden Knights, 21% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo Leagues, the right wing is, in the last five games since he's returned, 3 goals, 2 assists, 2 power play points, averaging over 4.5 shots per game, and playing on that second line with Hula and Pacioretty, has the nice schedule of the Vegas, playing Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, and Boston. All that's on the road. The first two games in particular are very intriguing. Montreal playing, as George said, playing better than expected, and obviously Boston will be a tough game, but you're sort of getting the numbers, you're getting the volume, and you're getting at least two, if not three, of those games that has some legitimate offensive potential. So a player who's come back and played well offensively as well. Dominic Simon, the Pittsburgh Penguins center left wing eligible player, at least in Yahoo Leagues, only 10% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo Leagues, and as I mentioned on Friday, recently promoted to the top line with Goodell and Sidney Crosby. In his last 6 games, he's got 2 goals, 4 assists, +6, and a power play goal, and has a solid schedule this week against New Jersey, Washington, and Arizona. Devon Shore for the Dallas Stars, a center, left wing, and right wing eligible player, at least in Yahoo Leagues, only 6% owned on average, playing on the top line with Tyler Seguin and Janmark. And even when Radulov does come back, if it is this week, I think Janmark's the guy who's going to get bumped off that line. I think he's going to stay there. But in the last 7 games, Shore has scored 2 goals, six assists, plus six, a power play goal, a shorthanded point as well, and he does have four games this week, even if it is a tougher schedule, playing Boston, Columbus, San Jose, and Nashville. A couple of other good recommendations for this week from players playing three games. How about Josh Bailey? I think a lot of us thought he was just going to go into fall into a black hole offensively with Tavares gone, and he's proving everybody wrong. 15 points overall this season for the New York Islanders right wing, who's only 50% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues in the last eight games in particular. Two goals, nine assists, six penalty minutes, a plus 10, four power play points, and a shorthanded point. What do you know? Barry Trotz putting him on the short the penalty kill, playing on the second line with Brock Nelson and Anders Lee, but also getting first power play time as well, and is playing Montreal, Tampa Bay, and Florida this week as well. And maybe even if you need a center, which is probably the most unlikely position you'll need to stream for a fantasy team, but Dylan Larkin for the Detroit Red Wings, the center's only 59% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues. Last seven games, three goals, seven assists, eight penalty minutes, a power play point, a shorthanded point, averaging over three shots per game during that time and having that pretty good schedule as well, playing Vancouver, the New York Rangers, and the Carolina Hurricanes. So lots of options, both goaltending-wise and skater-wise for you folks. That's all that we have for today, everybody. Have a good hockey week, and we'll talk to you on Friday.